Teil A Hörverstehen Englisch 2024 Fachhochschulreife Baden-Württemberg Haupttermin
Listening Comprehension Test. You will hear each recording twice. After each listening, you will have time to complete your answers. Task 1. You now have time to read the assignment. One.
Local and state law enforcement agencies have been using facial recognition technology for years to identify people. Taking, let's say, a photo of a suspect or grainy security camera footage and seeking to match the image within these massive photo databases made up of mugshots, passport and visa pictures, and driver's license images.
Two.
What makes this technology so frightening is that it enables a type of tracking at a scale that was previously impossible. The ability to analyze that footage and sift through it almost instantaneously, looking for specific people, is what kind of ratchets the alarm bells here up so high.
Three.
Facial recognition technology tends to misidentify people of color, and in particular, women of color, much more frequently than it does white people. And so I could see a serious concern about the sort of bias implications of this kind of tech being used to screen people.
Four.
The problem is that the political will, it's not moving as quickly as the pace of the technology itself. And more importantly, we see a lot of people making a lot of money selling this technology to the city and to businesses in the city.
Five.
So we have to ask, well, who are you trying to keep them safe from? How are you deciding who poses the threat? Is that a decision that, you know, the management of the venue is making, or is it a decision that the technological product is making, and who is checking that decision, right?
Now listen to the recording again. 1.
Local and state law enforcement agencies have been using facial recognition technology for years to identify people. Taking, let's say, a photo of a suspect or grainy security camera footage and seeking to match the image within these massive photo databases made up of mugshots, passport and visa pictures, and driver's license images.
2.
What makes this technology so frightening is that it enables a type of tracking at a scale that was previously impossible. The ability to analyze that footage and sift through it almost instantaneously, looking for specific people, is what kind of ratchets the alarm bells here up so high.
3.
Facial recognition technology tends to misidentify people of color, and in particular, women of color, much more frequently than it does white people. And so I could see a serious concern about the sort of bias implications of this kind of tech being used to screen people.
4.
The problem is that the political will, it's not moving as quickly as the pace of the technology itself. And more importantly, we see a lot of people making a lot of money selling this technology to the city and to businesses in the city.
5.
So we have to ask, well, who are you trying to keep them safe from? How are you deciding who poses the threat? Is that a decision that, you know, the management of the venue is making, or is it a decision that the technological product is making, and who is checking that decision, right?
Task 2. You now have time to read the assignment.
While several hundred thousand people in Southwest Florida still do not have electricity or water since Hurricane Ian, one community weathered the storm almost unscathed. Babcock Ranch, located north of Fort Myers, was designed and built to withstand the most powerful storms. NPR's Scott Newman reports.
Mark Wilkerson is what you might call a Babcock Ranch enthusiast. He's originally from Illinois, but moved here a few years ago.
Thought I wanted to be on the Gulf. And then the last hurricane came through, and it reminded me that, nope, you know what? I want to be in a place where I don't have to evacuate.
Wilkerson works for a company that maintains renewable infrastructure. He's showing me around in his brand new electric vehicle.
You feel that? That's on eco.
He also has a solar-powered golf cart. You see a lot of electric vehicles here. Every garage has a place to plug them in. Hurricane Ian was a big test for this community, where houses start in the mid-$200,000 range. It was built from the ground up to weather the worst that Mother Nature could throw at it. So Wilkerson stayed put as the storm came through last week.
At one time in the afternoon, I said, guys, I need to go. I think we're going to lose power, because the lights started flickering. And lo and behold, we never lost power.
Power lines are all run underground, shielded from high winds. The whole system is fed by a massive solar array on the outskirts of town. Natural gas supplies electricity at night.
This is our solar field here, so this is about 650,000 panels on 870 acres.
Kim Bailey is the official ambassador for Babcock Ranch.
So this is enough to power about 30,000 homes here.
That's way more power than they need. Right now, there are only about 5,000 residents here, so the excess gets fed into the grid, providing electricity for surrounding communities, many damaged in the storm. In Babcock Ranch, though, you'd hardly know that a major hurricane came through.
It's one of the only places in this Tri-County area where you're seeing kids run around and playing because there's no danger in the sidewalks or on the streets.
Jennifer Languel is a sustainability engineer who helped design Babcock Ranch. She lives here, too. As confident as she was of the community's durability, even she was nervous by the sheer strength of the storm.
I can definitely tell you I pulled up my construction drawings and I verified the wind speed on my construction drawings.
Part of the reason that Babcock Ranch is built 30 miles inland is to avoid coastal storm surge. Giant ponds also surround the development to protect houses from flooding.
The ponds are designed, if they overflow, to flow in between the houses and flood the road intentionally so that we have 2 more feet until it even gets to your house.
A community center here was designed to double as a reinforced hurricane shelter. Everyone staying there has come in from other hard-hit communities. And Babcock Ranch residents have been fielding social media requests and shuttling in supplies. 70-year-old Judith Schrag, who uses a walker, is sitting out front of the shelter smoking a cigarette.
Absolutely phenomenal in terms of donations. They are what have helped to keep this place going.
Schrag arrived here a few days ago after her Port Charlotte apartment was flooded out. Jennifer Languel says the hurricane served as a proof of concept for Babcock Ranch.
We don't want to brag by any stretch of the imagination because, you know, you do that, next day you get hit by a Category 5 and something doesn't work as well.
She's already looking at lessons learned and what can be done better. Scott Newman, NPR News, Babcock Ranch, Florida.
Now listen to the recording again.
While several hundred thousand people in southwest Florida still do not have electricity or water since Hurricane Ian, one community weathered the storm almost unscathed. Babcock Ranch, located north of Fort Myers, was designed and built to withstand the most powerful storms. NPR's Scott Newman reports.
Mark Wilkerson is what you might call a Babcock Ranch enthusiast. He's originally from Illinois, but moved here a few years ago.
Thought I wanted to be on the Gulf. And then the last hurricane came through, and it reminded me that, nope, you know what? I want to be in a place where I don't have to evacuate.
Wilkerson works for a company that maintains renewable infrastructure. He's showing me around in his brand new electric vehicle.
You feel that? That's on eco.
He also has a solar-powered golf cart. You see a lot of electric vehicles here. Every garage has a place to plug them in. Hurricane Ian was a big test for this community, where houses start in the mid-$200,000 range. It was built from the ground up to weather the worst that Mother Nature could throw at it. So Wilkerson stayed put as the storm came through last week.
At one time in the afternoon, I said, guys, I need to go. I think we're going to lose power because the lights started flickering. And lo and behold, we never lost power.
Power lines are all run underground, shielded from high winds. The whole system is fed by a massive solar array on the outskirts of town. Natural gas supplies electricity at night.
This is our solar field here, so this is about 650,000 panels on 870 acres.
Kim Bailey is the official ambassador for Babcock Ranch.
So this is enough to power about 30,000 homes here.
That's way more power than they need. Right now, there are only about 5,000 residents here, so the excess gets fed into the grid, providing electricity for surrounding communities, many damaged in the storm. In Babcock Ranch, though, you'd hardly know that a major hurricane came through.
It's one of the only places in this Tri-County area where you're seeing kids run around and playing because there's no danger in the sidewalks or on the streets.
Jennifer Languel is a sustainability engineer who helped design Babcock Ranch. She lives here, too. As confident as she was of the community's durability, even she was nervous by the sheer strength of the storm.
I can definitely tell you I pulled up my construction drawings and I verified the wind speed on my construction drawings.
Part of the reason that Babcock Ranch is built 30 miles inland is to avoid coastal storm surge. Giant ponds also surround the development to protect houses from flooding.
The ponds are designed, if they overflow, to flow in between the houses and flood the road intentionally so that we have 2 more feet until it even gets to your house.
A community center here was designed to double as a reinforced hurricane shelter. Everyone staying there has come in from other hard-hit communities. And Babcock Ranch residents have been fielding social media requests and shuttling in supplies. 70-year-old Judith Schrag, who uses a walker, is sitting out front of the shelter smoking a cigarette.
Absolutely phenomenal in terms of donations. They are what have helped to keep this place going.
Schrag arrived here a few days ago after her Port Charlotte apartment was flooded out. Jennifer Languel says the hurricane served as a proof of concept for Babcock Ranch.
We don't want to brag by any stretch of the imagination because, you know, you do that, next day you get hit by a Category 5 and something doesn't work as well.
She's already looking at lessons learned and what can be done better. Scott Newman, NPR News, Babcock Ranch, Florida.
Task 3. You now have time to read the assignment.
Natasha, tell us about what happened late last week in Utah.
Last Thursday in Utah at 3 o'clock in the afternoon local time.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is an honor to have all of you here today. We are
the governor held a ceremonial event in which he signed into law a package of bills that will fundamentally change how children and teens in Utah use social media.
These are first of their kind bills in the United States. And
these laws are designed to make kids safer online, but they go further than any other laws in the land.
Okay, so what exactly does this law actually do?
Well, the first thing it does is it prohibits social media companies from allowing people under 18 to have an account unless they have the explicit permission of parents. And that is going to affect people under 18 on a whole bunch of services, whether it's Instagram or TikTok or Twitter.
Right. In effect, it kind of is a default to no access unless a parent opts their child in.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. What else does it do?
The second thing it does is it gives parents access to their child's accounts. Hmm. So that means what the students posted, videos, messages they sent, messages they received from other people, what they searched for.
So even if a parent opts their child into social media under this law, that parent would still have access to their child's direct messages, list of followers, pictures that are posted, pictures that are sent privately through direct messages. Basically, any social media activity would have to be made available to a parent.
And the third major thing this law does is it will require social media networks to block access for minors in Utah to their accounts overnight, unless their parents change the setting.
Mm-hmm. During the hours when presumably you're supposed to be sleeping.
Exactly.
So, Natasha, this is very clearly and by far the strictest and most significant effort in the country to rein in the use of social media by minors. And it's not a secret that parents have been craving a way to limit their kids' access to these kinds of platforms. But what case did lawmakers in Utah make for such an expansive and sweeping set of restrictions that you just described?
The people who wrote this law are people who, like many parents across the country, are concerned that social media increases the risk of depression, anxiety, insomnia, the risk of cyberbullying, the risk of predation by strangers.
Right. And what about the opposition to this package of laws in Utah? I have to imagine that it was equally intense.
The opposition was very intense. The most intense came from tech industry trade groups that are funded by social media and other platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were child development experts who argued that sometimes the students or children or teens who are most in distress, who are going through emotional issues, identity issues that they can't talk to their parents about, are the ones who most need to find support and community online.
Hmm.
And that this might actually hinder them from getting the support they need, especially if they were in a family that was uncomfortable or opposed to their views, or if they were an abusive family. And there is evidence that social media can be really beneficial for kids and for teens.
Hmm.
It can improve their sense of community and belonging and their quality of life, and it can decrease stress.
Got it. Natasha, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Now listen to the recording again.
Natasha, tell us about what happened late last week in Utah.
Last Thursday in Utah at 3 o'clock in the afternoon local time.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is an honor to have all of you here today. We are
the governor held a ceremonial event in which he signed into law a package of bills that will fundamentally change how children and teens in Utah use social media.
These are first of their kind bills in the United States.
These laws are designed to make kids safer online, but they go further than any other laws in the land.
Okay, so what exactly does this law actually do?
Well, the first thing it does is it prohibits social media companies from allowing people under 18 to have an account unless they have the explicit permission of parents. And that is going to affect people under 18 on a whole bunch of services, whether it's Instagram or TikTok or Twitter.
Right. In effect, it kind of is a default to no access unless a parent opts their child in.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. What else does it do?
The second thing it does is it gives parents access to their child's accounts. Hmm. So that means what the students posted, videos, messages they sent, messages they received from other people, what they searched for.
So even if a parent opts their child into social media under this law, that parent would still have access to their child's direct messages, list of followers, pictures that are posted, pictures that are sent privately through direct messages. Basically, any social media activity would have to be made available to a parent.
And the third major thing this law does is it will require social media networks to block access for minors in Utah to their accounts overnight, unless their parents change the setting.
Mm-hmm. During the hours when presumably you're supposed to be sleeping.
Exactly.
So, Natasha, this is very clearly and by far the strictest and most significant effort in the country to rein in the use of social media by minors. And it's not a secret that parents have been craving a way to limit their kids' access to these kinds of platforms. But what case did lawmakers in Utah make for such an expansive and sweeping set of restrictions that you just described?
The people who wrote this law are people who, like many parents across the country, are concerned that social media increases the risk of depression, anxiety, insomnia, the risk of cyberbullying, the risk of predation by strangers.
Right. And what about the opposition to this package of laws in Utah? I have to imagine that it was equally intense.
The opposition was very intense. The most intense came from tech industry trade groups that are funded by social media and other platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were child development experts who argued that sometimes the students or children or teens who are most in distress, who are going through emotional issues, identity issues that they can't talk to their parents about, are the ones who most need to find support and community online.
Hmm.
And that this might actually hinder them from getting the support they need, especially if they were in a family that was uncomfortable or opposed to their views, or if they were an abusive family. And there is evidence that social media can be really beneficial for kids and for teens.
Hmm.
It can improve their sense of community and belonging and their quality of life, and it can decrease stress.
Got it. Natasha, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
This is the end of your listening comprehension test.